This is a production of the Ultimate Homeschool Radio Network. You've made the commitment.
You caught the vision.
You want your family to serve God.
But sometimes it's hard to put feet on that vision. Hey, Hal, do visions have feet?
Shh. How do you get from principle to practice?
What do you need to know about the issues affecting your family?
How do you apply God's Word in the 21st century?
Let's talk about it.
This is Making Biblical Family Life Practical with Hal and Melanie Young.
Well, hello, everybody. This is Hal.
And this is Melanie.
And we want to welcome you to this episode of Making Biblical Family Life Practical. You know, this is the time of year when everybody talks about the holidays. Of course, they mean Christmas and Thanksgiving and, you know, those two mainly. But it is a time with a lot of celebrations. And although we might look at them and say, I don't see a biblical commandment to celebrate some of these, on the other hand, there are principles in Scripture. And the one that we see is most clearly enunciated is in the way God initiated the Passover celebration for the Jews in the books of Moses, in Exodus, even the second book of the Bible. God says, this day shall be a memorial for you. He specified this celebration as a time for his people to remember God's works, to remember the blessings that God had toward his people. And, you know, what is more closely associated with that in our own calendar than the time of Thanksgiving?
You know, Thanksgiving is the only holiday that really hasn't been totally co-opted by things having nothing to do with the original celebration. You know, we still retain the name Thanksgiving, which means giving thanks. Most people still connect it with giving thanks. Although for many people, it's become just a time to feast and watch sports or parades.
Mm-hmm.
But, you know, there's so much more than that. This is a great place to take the first step in reforming the holidays for your family and making your holidays Christ-centered.
Yeah. And so we're going to talk about that. In this episode, we're talking about celebrating Thanksgiving. Now, we're putting this together now. We're broadcasting this a few weeks before Thanksgiving. Why is that?
So you have time to plan.
Exactly.
So you have time to make changes.
Exactly. And there's some things in here that make the celebration more memorable, more fun, and as well as more Christ-centered. It may take a little bit of thought, a little bit of time to put things together, but it's well worth it. And we wanted to share some things with you and do it in such a way that you've got the opportunity to think these things through and maybe put some in place for your Thanksgiving this year.
Because you can make Thanksgiving a time that is dear to your own family, that's a witness to your extended family, and it just glorifies God and still is a whole lot of fun. Because, you know, I think people connect Christianity with asceticism, with saying no to everything.
Right.
But really, you know, God approves of feasting. You know, there's lots of feasts commanded in the Old Testament, and we're told that there'll be feasting in the new heavens and the new earth.
Oh, yeah. And you know, Christianity is a joyful thing. I think back in church history, one of the very first hymn books that was written in English was the Geneva Psalm Book. It was written by time and took it back with them to England. You know, this was something that the Pilgrims and the Puritans would have been familiar with. Many of the songs, I think, transferred over from the Geneva Psalter into some of the ones that were, you know, current when the Mayflower came over here. And do you know that they were criticized because the tunes were so lively? They were so joyful that detractors called them Geneva jigs. They said it was like dance music. Well, you know what? There's a joy in serving Christ. And
there really is.
And they intentionally sobered them up, you know, to make them a little more somber and dignified. But, you know, I think we probably lost a little bit when we did that. Because, you know what, we are called to feast, to celebrate, to rejoice in the goodness of God and the many, many, many blessings he pours out on us.
Well, you know, Hal, one of the first things I want to encourage people is to consider hosting the celebration yourself.
Yeah.
That's kind of intimidating, especially if you're used to a big family celebration, to think about having all those people over at your house and you're responsible for taking care of it.
Yeah.
And I know, you know, homeschool families, we live in our houses, we homeschool in our houses. Our houses tend to be kind of lived in.
Yeah.
And need some extra work for the holidays.
Right.
But when you host a celebration at your house, you can set the agenda.
You can set the tone, and, you know, this carries off into Christmas as well.
It does.
That if you are the host or the hostess, you can go a long way towards setting the tone and the agenda and the goals of your time of celebration And you can guide it in a way that's going to be most honoring to Christ and will still be a joyful occasion.
Well, let's talk for just a minute about some things we want to take a special notice of at Thanksgiving season.
Mm-hmm.
For one thing, the history of it.
Yeah, and, you know, I really encourage you, if you've got time to do it, it's really good to read the accounts of the very first Thanksgiving. Because our Thanksgiving, of course, now days of Thanksgiving celebration have been as long as God's people have been. But the date that we've set in November to celebrate the founding of our country, that has a specific historical event, and there are written accounts from the time.
Yeah.
You know, and so if you read William Bradford's account of their first Thanksgiving celebration, if you read Edward Winslow's account, you know, these things are really interesting reading, and you see that the things that we learned in school, you know, we colored pictures and we cut out construction paper feathers for our turkeys and such like that, you know, they have a basis in history, but the history itself is a lot wilder, a lot more exciting, a lot more adventurous.
Well, and you know, so many people in the generations after us didn't really study the Pilgrims at all.
No.
And that's a shame, because so much of what our country is, the heart, the ethos of our whole nation, was started right there on the Mayflower. You know, mm-hmm. right there when they signed the original...
The Mayflower Compact.
The Mayflower Compact. That's really was one of the founding documents of our country, and affected all the rest of our country's history.
Well, I think when I think about those settlements in Massachusetts, first the Pilgrims, and you got to understand, 1620, Mayflower landed on Cape Cod. Those were the Pilgrims, and we'll explain the difference in just a minute. It was about, 8 to 10 years later that the Puritans settled what was known as the Massachusetts Bay Colony, centered around what became the city of Boston. And there were two different groups that were contemporaneous and shared a lot of things, think about them. When I look at those two groups, I see two things which have carried through an American character from the very start. One of them is people of great religious faith and personal conviction.
Yeah.
Because sometimes it wasn't religious conviction. Sometimes it was just a philosophical conviction. But they were people who had very strong opinions that they were willing to stand by, if necessary, die for.
Mm-hmm.
And that's something that Americans are known for around the world. And you know, the second one is they were not afraid to set out to do something different, to do something individual, even at personal hazard. They weren't afraid of the adventure.
Yes.
And again, those are traits that have carried through all over the world. People shake their heads at Americans saying, wow, those people, you never can tell. And yet they go through life ultimately with an optimism and a smile and a friendliness about them, even when they have to endure hardship, even when they have to endure isolation or separation or struggles of all sorts. And I think, you know, that really kind of goes back to the sort of people that came to America first.
Yes. You know, one important thing to realize about the first Thanksgiving is it came after a time of real suffering.
Mm-hmm.
That, you know, the Mayflower landed at Plymouth at the wrong time of year.
They were heading for Virginia, and they started out too late in the season to cross the Atlantic safely.
Yeah.
And then they were delayed leaving even then once they got on board the ships. And so when they got to Cape Cod in November of all times.
Wow, that's not a place I'd want to land in Massachusetts with no house.
It was cold, it was unpleasant, it was dangerous, and the ship's captain basically dumped them off. He said, I'm not going any further. They knew they were too far north, but he said, okay, this is coastline, off you go. And, you know, they were pretty much put out there in Massachusetts rather than much further south.
It didn't take long for their supplies to run short for disease and cold and hunger
mm-hmm.
strike. In fact, they called that the dying time.
Yeah.
Because so many people died. You know, I remember seeing an illustration that showed how many people started at the Plymouth Colony and how many people ended. And so when they had that first harvest, and for the first time since they landed, it was almost a year later.
Yeah.
They had enough to eat.
Yeah, when you consider they landed in November, they were not going to get their crops in until the next fall.
Yeah.
Okay. You've got, you know, 10 months before you've got the harvest coming in. So they had to eke out an existence on clams and fish,
berries and eels,
deer that they shot. And yes, they did find some Indian corn that they borrowed and paid for later. You need to point that out, you know, because there's lots of misinformation about what went on there. But
there is so much misinformation. Yeah, that's one of the reasons that you and I put together our Thanksgiving book. We gathered together because we wanted people to know what's the real story in their own words.
Right.
And so we have a lot of quotes about what really happened. Mm-hmm. You know, but you can see when, after they had suffered so much, so many people had died,
mm-hmm.
the Lord had miraculously taken care of them. Like, you know, this, just the story of Squanta, you know, that he had been captured by Europeans and taken to Europe and learned to speak English.
Yes.
And then came back. And so there was an Indian there who spoke English, who was a Christian. He was their brother in Christ who was able to help them know what was safe to eat and what wasn't. And
yeah.
I mean, is that not God's provision? That's amazing.
What else can it be?
I mean, to land in a new land.
Yeah, and the place that they landed, providentially, was pretty much vacant. There were Indian tribes to the north and the south, and some of them quite hostile. But that particular piece of land had been inhabited by a tribe that had suffered a great epidemic a few years before, and basically had wiped out most of the tribe. The rest of them had assimilated into their neighbors, and so all of this land was unoccupied. There was nobody really to challenge their landing and setting up their settlement there, and they were able to get themselves established in a defensible way so that they could negotiate with their neighbors and have a useful, you know, a constructive relationship with them and not one of enmity.
Well, it's just miraculous how the Lord provided for them, took care of them,
mm-hmm.
helped them through that season. They had a lot to be thankful for.
They honestly did. Even though, you know, no question about it, tremendous suffering, tremendous deprivation.
Yeah. I mean,
so many people lost a spouse. So many people, like my, I have an ancestor who came across on the Mayflower. He was a young teenager, and he came across with his aunt and uncle. Both of them died the first winter during that starving time. And so, you know, my ancestor finds himself, 14 or 15 years old. He's thousands of miles from home. He's in this little settlement full of people that are starving to death.
And his relatives have died.
And all of his relatives have died, you know. And that's a tough welcome to manhood. And yet you can follow his history just like the other survivors and see many of them went on and achieved great things, became leaders in their congregation and in their community, in spite of, or maybe because of what they had suffered together.
You know, now let's take a short station break, and mm-hmm. then let's talk about how we could actually celebrate Thanksgiving in a way that honors our ancestors back at Plymouth,
mm-hmm.
that glorifies God, because, you know, that's what people are really wondering. How can I make it more than eating till I feel like a snake beached out in the sun and watching sports?
Okay. So let's talk about that.
What
would you like to share with
us? There are two resources we have that I think would be a huge blessing to their families at Thanksgiving.
Okay.
The first one is obviously our Thanksgiving book, We Gather Together.
It's called We Gather Together. It's an e-book.
It's an e-book, and it has all that history we've been talking about.
Yes.
But way more.
Well, we went through the history, and we don't just tell the stories. We give you the exact words of the people that recorded it themselves.
So you can read it to your children, and they will hear what the pilgrims and what the Indians said.
Right.
And it also includes songs to sing, recipe, planning things, ideas, all the things we're going to talk about in the next 15 minutes, plus lots more that we won't have time to talk about.
So if you are interested in this, you need to go to our website,
raisingrealmen.com/WeGatherTogether.
We gathered together.
The second thing I think would be a blessing to people at Thanksgiving is plan a house.
Oh, yeah.
You know, we discovered this last year. Our daughter brought it to us, and she said, Mom, would you read this, see if it's worth reading?
And, you know, if you've seen the Disney movie, you just think, oh, man, it was syrupy. I don't like that.
Yeah, I didn't want to read it. I thought it would be preachy. I thought it would be didactic and boring, and I could not stop laughing.
No, the book is ever so much better than the movie, and it's better than the reputation that grew out of it, because, you know, the young girl, the center character in here, is a young orphan whose father, a pastor out on the frontier, had taught her, always look for God's blessing. No matter what circumstances, God has some blessing in there. And so here's this little 8-year-old girl who's every conflict in life, every struggle she faces, she sits down, she thinks, what can I be thankful for? Can I find something to be grateful about?
It's a hoot. It's very funny.
Oh, it is.
Yeah, and
it's
very
pointed.
Well, it appealed to our whole family.
Yeah.
Because I decided to do it as a read aloud, and I would be reading, and I'd hear the teenage boys in the other room say, hey, wait, are you reading Pollyanna? Can you wait till I finish the dishes? I want to hear it. Teenage boys. It is fantastic.
It's
and
funny.
It'll change your family.
It is thought-provoking.
It'll make you more grateful.
It'll encourage you a lot. So.
What a great thing to listen to leading up to Thanksgiving to increase the gratefulness in your family.
Wow. Okay, so this is...
And that's at raisingrealmen.com/Pollyanna. It's an audiobook.
Yes.
I did it. Don't judge my voice by the night. I've got a cold.
Oh, no, but you did a beautiful recording.
It's fantastic and has some really special music on it, too.
It's Pollyanna. Okay, so there's two L's in there.
Okay, so yeah. raisingrealmen.com/Pollyanna. Okay, let's get to how... What can they do to celebrate to make this more Christ-centered?
Well, you know, one of the things that we do is kind of like the custom of the Passover, where they take the young person.
Let's talk about what we do earlier first.
Let's talk about
Thanksgiving tree.
That's interesting. Okay, I'll tell you a quick story on that. Many years ago, I got noticed that my job was being closed out, and I was going to be laid off just a few weeks before Christmas. And, you know, things were looking kind of grim coming into the holidays. And I thought, maybe we can do something with this. And so I got a big roll of brown paper from the mill where I worked, with permission, okay. And I took it home, and I cut a tree trunk out of it, about a 6-foot-tall tree trunk. And I put it up on the wall in the dining room. But our dining room was a big kitchen dining room area. And Melanie and the children, who were much younger then, went out, and they gathered some fall leaves, and then they did the old construction paper thing, cutting out multicolored fall leaves. And the deal was, we put a basket full of these leaves on the table with a pen. And every time we sat down to eat, everybody at the table had to write something they were thankful for on one of those leaves. And we'd stick them up on the tree. Well, you know, the first time or two, they were, you know, I'm thankful for Mama. I'm thankful for Daddy. I'm thankful for our dog.
And after a while, it gets kind of, you run out of immediate things. I'm thankful for clean water.
Yeah.
You know, but after it starts filling up with things you're thankful for, and you realize you're thankful for ever so much more than you ever dreamed.
Yes.
You know, here we were facing unemployment at the holidays. I think I was expecting it. It was just a real stressful time.
It was bad.
And yet we were absolutely jammed up with blessing. The tree was covered in leaves, with leaves all at the bottom. And it really helped us to focus our minds on, you know what, we've got a lot to thank God for.
That's a great thing. If you're going through hard times, we strongly encourage something like that. Now, what else did you want to tell them? Because
okay.
I'll tell them the other thing.
Okay.
But
in the weeks before Thanksgiving, we teach our kids Thanksgiving songs.
Yeah.
Songs that have traditionally been sung at Thanksgiving and the history of those. And that's in that book, too.
Yeah. Along with the history of them and some neat artwork, too.
Yeah. And I do a lot of planning. One thing I do is before I start, I have some charts. I sit down and I plan exactly what I'm going to do and how it's going to go as far as what gets cooked what days, what ingredients I need.
Yeah.
And it just takes the stress out because I realize, okay, I can space this out. There's some things I can do 2 or 3 days in advance.
Well, some people aren't that organized. You know,
well,
do you have your form in here?
I got all my forms in there, everything.
Your forms are here to help you plan.
Yes, and tons of fantastic tested recipes.
You have the shopping lists.
Yeah, in fact, how to cook the very best turkey you've ever had in your entire life.
Oh, I can vouch for that.
Boy, yeah. I like a turkey that you slice through the skin
mm-hmm.
and the juice runs down.
Yeah,
I used to think I didn't like turkey. That's because I always had it cooked in those roasting bags. They're horrible.
Yeah, cooked to death or else spoiled.
Now, okay, let's talk about the day of the celebration because you were going to tell them about one of the traditions we have that I just love.
Okay. Now, you know, in the Passover feast, the youngest person who's able asks questions of the father, you know, to explain why are we celebrating this day. And we do something similar. There's an old poem called, where is it now? 5 Kernels of Corn. It's an old poem that talks about the struggle to survive that our forefathers in Plymouth, underwent. And we have the youngest person who is able to read comfortably. We'll read this poem. It's about, what, five verses, I guess. And it just talks about the fate of the Pilgrim Fathers, the Pilgrim Mothers, the Pilgrim families, as they were sharing very meager rations. And they had to save enough to plant, and so they could only eat five kernels of corn plus whatever they caught or gathered out there in the wild. That was all of their supplies that they could spare, five kernels of corn.
So we put five kernels of corn on each person's plate.
Yes.
And then the youngest person able to read this poem, just to remind us all, we whine so much. We don't even really know what suffering is, it seems like. And so we want to remind our children that, the people that started our country went through a lot to get us here.
Yes.
And so we read that. And then sometimes we read some other things. Like there's a fun one called The Forefather's Song that's kind of fun, that talks about the doing without in a fun way.
Oh, I like the one about pumpkins at morning and pumpkins at noon. If it were not for pumpkins, we'd all be undone.
Yeah, I love that line.
Yeah.
Sometimes one of the older children will read one of the Thanksgiving proclamations, like the one by Washington or Lincoln. There's some great proclamations. And what they had to say will disabuse you of the notion that our founding fathers did not think God had a place in society.
Yeah.
They're actually to read. Those are in We Gather Together, too.
Yeah.
And so as we eat, one of our traditions is each person has to share something they're thankful for each of those kernels of corn on the plate.
So we just go round and round the table talking about things we're grateful for.
Yeah, and we do that as we eat. It's casual, and it doesn't have to be around in definite order, but just each person shares. And it's really neat to see each person's perspective, Hal. To see what the little kids are thankful for and what they remember of God's working with our family that year.
Yeah.
And, what each person is grateful for, because, the first one or two might be kind of predictable for each person, but you see the things that happen that really impacted each individual in our home.
And I'm saying something else, too. When you do this kind of annual review, if you will, looking back at the last year of blessings, oftentimes that time has put perspective on the struggles you had earlier in the year.
Yeah.
The things that happened in March, the things that happened last January that at the time were just awful crises and burdens and trials. And yet here in November, you've seen God's hand resolving those situations. You've seen how you've been able to work through it and sometimes grown through it in faith and grown in maturity. And you can say, you know what? That was no fun at the time, but it was good. It was a good time, and it was well spent, and God has blessed us in spite of what we feared.
One thing I worried about when we first started doing this, inviting our extended family now, is I worried, what would people think? How would they react? Would they make fun of it? Would they pitch a fit? And I have been very surprised to find that our very cosmopolitan, worldly family actually loves it to pieces.
There is something in our hearts, I think, that says we need times of reflection.
We need ceremony.
We need ceremony. We need things that draw us back to first principles.
Yes.
We would say draws you back to God.
Yes.
And, they eventually become the same thing. But, it's remarkable to see that even the most flighty, worldly family members will often calm down and become very mellow, become very thoughtful.
Well, I just think about this very sophisticated, cosmopolitan relative of ours.
Right.
That's traveled all over the world and lives abroad.
Mm-hmm.
And I was really concerned about what they would think about this.
Yeah.
And when we called on the youngest person in the family to read the five kernels of corn, this relative of ours jumped up and ran and got the camcorder and recorded it so they could show their friends back home, because they thought it was awesome.
How about that?
And
so don't be afraid.
Yeah, because, the testimony to your extended family is amazing. And if you do it with just boldness, you just boldly do these things, you will be stunned at the reaction that people have. Because now I tell you what, we've been doing this for a number of years, and people just love it.
It's just
they look forward to it. They expect it. Lots of times after we've eaten and we've all dozed a little bit, we'll sing. I remember suggesting that, again, at a holiday that we had some family members that, I didn't think they would be in sympathy with it. I thought they'd probably make fun of us.
Mm-hmm.
But kids are sometimes really bold to say things. One of our kids says, "Let's sing." And at that time, we didn't have the songs all printed out like we do now from our book.
Yeah.
So we passed around hymnals, and we started singing old hymns. And my grandfather, who I had only heard him say something about God maybe twice in his whole life, started crying. And I said, "What's wrong? What's wrong?" And he said, "This just makes me so happy because I remember the happy days when I was a little boy and my family used to gather around and sing these same songs."
Wow.
And I would have never known that if we had not had the guts to do it. I thought you'd make fun of it.
Surprise.
And yet,
what a blessing.
And, that kind of freed us up to interact with him in a different way. And we sang with him every time we got together until he died. And I remember meeting with him in the nursing home, and he had Alzheimer's, and he couldn't even really recognize us. But when we started singing with him, he sang with us, and he remembered all the words.
Yes.
Because be bold. Recapture these holidays for Jesus Christ.
That's right. I mean, for goodness sakes, the world has taken so much from us. Are we going to let them have our time to thank God as well? I'd say not.
No way.
Grab hold of this. This is our holiday.
And
other people are welcome to celebrate with us, but they're not going to take it away.
And look, if you just don't know how to pull this off, go out to raisingrealmen.com/WeGatherTogether, and you will find I can't remember how much it is out there, maybe $5.
Yep.
It will tell you what to do start to finish. It gives you all the recipes you need. Tells you how to cook them, tells you what to say at the feast, everything so that you can do this, pull this off in your house there.
Yeah.
And we did it because we want families to do this. We want them to recapture the holidays for Christ because Thanksgiving is just begging us. The story behind it, the history behind it,
mm-hmm.
what we're doing, the whole name of it, everything is saying glorify God in this. So let's do it.
Amen. Amen. Well, look, we've got a few more episodes of this kind of thing coming up, too. I know next week, are we not next week? We're going to be talking about how do you get along with your extended family during the holidays.
Sometimes that's not easy.
Yeah, okay, so you've got to get together. The law requires it.
And we're going to be talking about all kinds of guilty parties, such as the one that quizzes your children about what they've learned.
Yeah.
And the one who wants to know what causes this.
Yeah.
And,
do you know what causes it?
Yes. And all the different family members that are really challenging, the ones that buy the gifts that you've asked that your children not get.
Yeah.
All those things, we're going to talk about that.
But, go ahead and join us because it'll be encouraging, it'll be useful, it'll be kind of funny, too.
I think. Yeah.
Okay. And we also, coming up, we're going to be talking about making your gift giving more meaningful.
Yes.
And how do you save money at Christmas when everybody opens up their wallet and empties it? How can you save money by being a strategic shopper? That's our meeting with Candy Foot.
Yes, Candy Foot's going to be joining
yes.
us, a strategic shopper, and she's going to help you save money.
Hmm.
So join us on December 1st with Candy Foot.
Yep.
And this is Making Biblical Family Life Practical.
Yeah, it is. And we really appreciate you joining us here. We really appreciate the opportunity to share these things with you. Why don't you share them with some other people, too? You can catch the recordings of this at www.halandmelanie.com/radio.
Or you can search for us on iTunes. If you listen on iTunes, how about go give us a review? Because I'd really love for iTunes to push us up in the ratings so that more people can find us.
That's true. So until next time, I'm Hal.
And I'm Melanie.
And we appreciate you joining us. Thanks so much.
Bye, y'all.
You've been listening to Making Biblical Family Life Practical with Hal and Melanie Young. If you found this program interesting, challenging, and encouraging, why not join us on the web at halandmelanie.com. That's halandmelanie.com. Or follow us on social media. You can can find us on Facebook at Facebook/Hal and Melanie or Facebook.com/Raising Real Men. This program is a production of the Ultimate Homeschool Radio Network. Join us next week when we'll be back to talk about making biblical family life practical. Until then, thank you and God bless you for listening.